Hey everyone, this is Mark Bonner and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand, brought to you in partnership with Shout. Shout is a free, confidential, 24/7 text messaging support service for anyone struggling to cope. If life ever feels like it's getting too much, you can anonymously text 85258 anytime, day or night, and speak to a trained volunteer for mental health support. Enjoy the pod.
Hello everyone, welcome along to whoever's feeling brave enough to listen. After three defeats on the trot and just the one goal scored, you'd be forgiven for taking a week off. But we plough on. I'm joined by two people who won't let a simple thing like a train strike stand in their way of an away day. First up, Matt Caspell. And Matt, we have to start with a question from friend of the pod, Tom Dobbin. Is the Matt Caspell curse rearing its ugly head again? It's not looking good, is it?
Is he a friend of the pod? I don't know.
He's my friend of the pod. He's probably your enemy of the pod.
Like an acquaintance of the pod. I just don't think there's any credence to this. I'm not even gonna go there.
For anyone who might not know what the Matt Caspell curse is, just if you could
reacquaint. I don't even think it's a real thing. This is the idea. What it seems to be interchangeable, the idea that when I'm on the pod, we either lose our next game or we have just lost a game, like when I'm due to be on.
Or both. Yeah.
Or both. Yeah. I think any guest at the moment is a curse, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, we did a lot of pods in the promotion season before you, and we were pretty, pretty positive around then. I don't think there was any curses. Anyway, and secondly, I've got Tom Walker with me. How are you feeling about the prospect of dismantling two more losses, Tom, in between baiting out Ipswich fans on Twitter, that is?
Yeah. To be honest, I was more excited to dismantle Matt Caspell and his... the curse that he brings. plenty of fun. It's all fun and games. You might need to get the old bleeper out because you might be referring to the Ipswich fans as something not too complimentary. But another word starting with C, interestingly.
And it won't be the first time either. There is a lot to get through this week. So let's plough straight in and let's start in Suffolk at the hands of a 3-0 defeat at the hands of Ipswich on Tuesday night. Tom, let's go with you as you've introed me into Ipswich in such a smooth way. Let's start on the pitch. Feels like a game that we went in with a plan. We went in with a way of playing and a way that Bonner thought was our best route to getting points against undoubtedly one of the best sides in the league. Lasted 60 minutes, sort of sucked up pressure relatively well up to that point, you might say. And then obviously one goal opened the floodgates. One became two, became three. Do you think this is just a result that you can put down to just the difference in quality, probably one of the toughest games on the card for the season, and just move on?
A little bit. Let's get all the usual sort of caveats out of the way early. Bigger budget, bigger ground, big attendance. And a game that we're not expected to win because they are in the other league in this league. Fine. Let's leave that at the door. A little bit. I think it was one of those game plans where it works until it doesn't. Do you know what I mean? And then, last season it worked perfectly. And by the time it had got to about the time that we conceded on Tuesday, you could tell that Ipswich were kind of beating themselves by that point. Whereas this season they obviously had all of the ball in the first half, all of it pretty much throughout the entire second half, and I think the other thing to note is they have improved. A lot of that comes down to the manager McKenna. He's obviously managed to implement a lot of things that they've just simply got better at. I think even last season they had a squad that was in terms of individual quality a cut above what we have access to. But they maybe just weren't quite as well drilled as they are now. And essentially they just kept calm, kept in possession, kept plugging away. And obviously ultimately they get that break. And, I think the second and third goals, there's things that could have been done better, but ultimately it's all about the first, isn't it? If you go in a sort of play like we did, for anyone that didn't see, the game plan was essentially to stay within our own 18-yard box and just try and defend that, with everything that we've got. Which I think is a strategy that sometimes you pull off, sometimes what happens. and they managed to get one, like not against the run of play, but really it's the first time they've got a proper break and first time they managed to sort of get through us. And yeah, when you're 1-0 down in a situation like that, it becomes a very, very difficult prospect to get anything. I think it all comes from the qualities that Ipswich have got and obviously have, which is that dictates how you go into these games, and how you play and how you set up. And yeah, I think in the end, pressure just told, I think.
Yeah, Caspel, do you want to try and provide a sort of... I mean, I'm putting a harsh task on you here. Do you want to try and provide a sort of slightly more critical view of the U's? You know, something Tom mentioned there was we went in, the game plan worked until it didn't, and he's right. Was there maybe no plan B? Was there no effective enough outball from playing that game plan? Or is that maybe just being a bit hypercritical?
Probably just the Matt Caspel curse, isn't it? Why did you write it off, mate? Yeah. Dolphin's going to love that. Yeah. I thought, to be honest, actually, no, I'll be optimistic. I'll be fairly positive about it. Of all of our recent performances where we've had a bit of trouble in the last few weeks, I actually think we did play quite well. We had a good game plan. We executed it pretty well. I think Tom's right. Once we had conceded that goal, it's kind of inevitable how things were going to turn out, unfortunately. I guess the disappointment just comes from it felt like when we went there last season, even though we had a sort of similar setup and mentality, it just felt like we just had more of an opportunity to actually take something away from the game, which we obviously went and did. Whereas this time it really felt like there was not much glimmer of hope at any stage during the game, particularly, and you're kind of clinging on and trying to get a point out of it. I think the substitutions is interesting. Obviously that's kind of reared its head again. People saying, like, did we leave it too late? Should we have done stuff earlier? Obviously, Ipswich brought players on who immediately changed the game. I think this five subs rule is really starting to show its teeth against the smaller clubs now, because honestly, it's not even just the five subs thing, but the resources they have, the players they brought on are, I think someone said in the message board, it's like they would all be easily first team players in our own team, and people are... some of these clubs at the top of the league are just bringing these players on into the game. So, yeah, it was disappointing ultimately, but I actually think we matched them really well for 70 minutes and then just didn't have enough in the tank to get over the line.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good assessment of it. Let's. What Bonner said after the game is quite interesting. He said, you know, results like this won't define our season. And I think he's right, obviously. But is there... to sort of put a different spin on it, as we're moving on to the Bristol Rovers chat, is losing games like not just at Ipswich, but at home against, you know, Barnsley and Derby and these sorts of sides, and not getting anything from these, not even a point here or there, which is something that we did do last season against a lot of these bigger sides coming to the Abbey, is that putting a lot of pressure on the games against sides around us like Rovers, Tom? Do you think that's maybe something that... is the sort of the biggest downside from this? And then we're suddenly looking at these Rovers games. We'll talk about Port Vale coming up as well, that suddenly these games have just got massive amounts of pressure on them to get something.
I don't think anyone could disagree that these aren't necessarily the games that define our season, you know, in that nobody would expect that we would be competing against these over a 46-game season. Mm. The problem is that we've now been in the division for, I think, a long enough time that you could rightly expect that every now and again we will pick up something against them, like you've just rightly mentioned we did last season. I think in the first half of the season, I picked up the odd point against like Ipswich, Sheffield Wednesday,
and
obviously went to Portsmouth and won, who maybe weren't quite in that bracket last season, but they're still the sort of team that essentially we've struggled against this season so far. And obviously in the second part of the season, those points were turning into, you know, wins at places that we just simply wouldn't expect to go and win. I'm not suggesting that we should be getting points off all of them, because, you know, the maths is pretty obvious. They pay their players at least 10 times what we pay ours on, you know, in some instances. And on any given day, you know, if we play at our best and they maybe have a bit of an off day, maybe we get one or two decisions going in our favour, then yeah, sure. Like we can go to these grounds and win. They don't define our season in that, you know, we don't need to be competing with them every time. But if you're writing off like,
yeah,
what we're saying, like probably 10 teams of this sort of bracket in the league, so that's 20 of your fixtures across the course of a season. If you lose all of those, then they will define your season, because that leaves a very small amount of games that you're going to get points out of, or target points out of.
And you can then basically only lose two or three games across the rest of the season to have enough points to make up, basically.
Yeah, I do still back that these things will come. Obviously, we've got a big test next week, and hopefully that can be the start of it. Having flashbacks to what happened at Hillsborough maybe takes away my confidence a little bit, but I think generally speaking, like, it's fair to say that we're not expected to go there and get anything. We're not going to be, you know, have our season defined by these games. Like, that's absolutely correct, but they kind of don't define a season until they do, like I've just said, because it's a lot of fixtures that, you know, we go into obviously as massive underdogs, which we know is always going to be the case. But I would like to think that maybe we could start scraping a point here or a point there. And however you get them, it doesn't really matter. It's just about kind of getting them on the board. But yeah, I think, as I say, we'll see on Saturday how that pans out.
Well, we'll come on to Saturday, but let's sort of go down the other route, which is what losing games like Ipswich does for games like Bristol Rovers away. Casper, where does this rank for you as among the most disappointing results of the season so far? Because there's been an interesting sort of 24 hours since, I think, where, I don't know, I'm not calling it panic, but I think it's a change in narrative, maybe, should we say, on our season so far.
I mean, there is a bit of panic creeping in, I think.
There probably is a bit. Yeah, you instantly mentioned points per game when we came on this call, so it sounds like you've got something underlying.
I mean, points per game is something I always look at anyway, to be honest. Normally, I use it to soothe my mind, if you know what I mean. And all season so far, and even now, our points per game puts us ahead of where we need to be to stay up in League One. So that's definitely a positive. But we've eaten away into that margin pretty heavily over the last few weeks. Obviously, the season's still early, so. Mm-hmm. Some good results quickly swings that back around anyway.
That probably is quite a good point to mention, isn't it? Sorry to interrupt. It's just like, yeah, it is the start of October. Like, that is a good point. Like, it only takes what we've lost, just lost three in a row. If you do put a couple of results together, that sort of points per game and that points tally does very quickly change, doesn't it?
Yeah, and this is just the nature of a football fan base. I think all the other clubs are the same, right? Every club has elements of the fan base that are going to be very reactionary. So when times are good, they've sort of wildly over-indexed on the success you're having. And then when times are a little bit difficult, which they definitely are now, perhaps the pendulum swings a bit too far the other way. I mean, where does it rank in terms of disappointing results? Quite highly, I would say. Just because it felt like these, you know, forget Ipswich, that's fine, write it off. But these are the games where you want to go in and you need to be getting results. Like, I think we were quite competitive in the game. We created quite a few good chances. We deserved to get the goal we got. And then, I don't know, I mean, it was just a really confused performance all around. Lots of players playing in quite interesting positions, line up. Not a big bit of clarity really on like how we were actually trying to approach the game. I don't think it all looked a little bit messy and jumbled. And I think that's probably more concerning at this point, even than the results, I would say, is more that, I know some of this is coming up a bit later on, but we just seem to be losing our way a little bit. And we seem to have, we seem to not have a clear idea of what it is we were supposed to be doing yesterday. At no point during the game did I have a really clear idea of, right, this is like how we're trying to approach this. It all just felt a little bit scrambled, basically.
I think it is quite a good time of the pod to actually mention that and come onto it just now that you've touched on it, is this sort of question of identity a little bit, which is maybe something that we've noticed a little bit over the past month. It's been mentioned a lot on this pod, Tom, about going to playing big sides, you know, that discussion we've just had, and being little old Cambridge and bringing that side of us, which we saw so well last year, numerous occasions, which we don't need to go through now. But then also that a slight bit of ruthlessness maybe at the start of this season. If you look at our home form against maybe Lincoln and MK and teams like this, and Morecambe even, where we managed to get a job done against sides that were clearly maybe a little bit worse than us. Do you think there's something in the side where it lacks a bit of identity? Like let's look at the formation from yesterday, right? So you're playing Williams at left back, you're playing Brophy centre midfield alongside Digby, Okadina at right back. There's depth is one question, but do you think he's just sort of popping, is a bit of square pegs in round holes, just grasping at something to try and hope that something works rather than knowing what you're trying to be and how you're trying to approach games?
Yeah, I think the identity question is probably the interesting one. And it's something that we, you know, between the three of us sort of talked about on the way back yesterday. And I think at that point, my opinion was that we don't really know what our identity is, you know, as a club, or not as a club, but certainly as a team. You know, in the sense that last season, if you asked anybody how did Cambridge play, how do they set up, it was quite a clear way and sort of quite a clear approach to pretty much all our games. So I'd maybe revise that a little bit to, rather than not knowing our identity, it's kind of being between two. And, you know, so we know where we've come from, we know where we're going. We're just kind of this weird middle period of, I think, just trying to kind of do stuff in ways that gets points while also trying to change the style of play and obviously what the approach to these games is a little bit, which I think is, you know, obviously when you go into places like Bristol Rovers and lose, and I guess, you know, the obvious stat is that they were in the bottom four at the start of the day, so you can kind of categorise them as the sort of place you want to go and get points. It's not the sort of place you just rock up and win. I think that's mm-hmm. probably something fair to say. You know, they're not, I don't think anyone that watched the game yesterday would suggest that these were a brilliant side, and I think come the end of the season, if you finish below them, there's probably a strong chance that you will be relegated. And I'm again confident that that won't be the case. But I just think in terms of that kind of the kind of progression of the team, it might in the sort of immediate future be quite useful to kind of go, right, let's revert to type, let's go back to what we know we're good at here. And that might serve as well maybe for the next two or three games. And you know what, there's probably an argument that that's needed, and that's probably the most important thing right now. But maybe in the sort of longer term, you know, we might look back in 3, 6, 9, 12 months and think, do you know what? Like, we've really stuck at something here, and it's really kind of paying dividends now, rather than just going, right, well, we've got Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday. We need to change everything about the way that we're trying to play, what we're trying to become, because we want to get at least a point on the board in that game. And I guess the nature of football is that it is a very short-term sport in terms of, you know, if you lose three games on the bounce, that changes your outlook. You know, Casper, you just mentioned about the points per game. I would maybe look at it in a different way in terms of position in the league table, even at this, you know, relatively early stage. Like, we were all kind of looking at it and kind of thinking, is there a chance here? And now it's, you know, very, you know, the conversation's 180 to, oh shit, like, we're looking over our shoulder a little bit and thinking, are we going to be, you know, competing with, you know, those teams that we've just talked about, the Ipswiches, the Sheffield Wednesdays, the sort of top, you know, the higher end of the division, where are we going to be scrapping for our lives, you know, looking around for points, just trying to do anything. obviously, it doesn't have to be as extreme as that. Like, you don't have to go from one to the other. I think there's a middle ground in there, which is that we're just not playing well at the moment. And we, you know, we've been good for the start of this season. I guess you would evidence that by saying, you know, at the same point last season, 13 games in, I think we're on 15 points, we're now on 16. So, you know, we've not got like markedly better, but we're certainly not worse based on that. And I do think that, you know, there's a decent argument at the start to this season that we've had has actually been tougher than the one that we had last season. So I think by this point, we hadn't really come into contact with any of those, you know, sort of top clubs. And this season, we've got two or three of them out of the way already. The point on team selection is one that I know we're going to come on to, particularly when we talk about the midfield. But I mean, just talking about like the defence specifically, I just think like, at Ipswich, it was kind of really highlighted that if you go into those games with basically a makeshift back four, like, you're just asking for trouble. Okadina right back, I rate him as a footballer. Clearly, we've talked about him from time to time, but that's an experiment. It's maybe just got to stop. I'd rather have Williams at right back and then have someone makeshift at left back rather than sort of, you know, actually say two square pegs in two round holes. I think the kind of net result of that is that the sort of average quality or the average sort of comfortability, if you like, of the players in the back four goes up by going Williams at right back, and maybe someone who does look a bit out of position at left back could be Brophy. I know he obviously played there for Orient a number of times.
Or even if you were to play Okadina at left back, you'd have Brophy covering him, who seems like the most sensible midfielder to cover a sort of slightly makeshift left back, right? Anyway, continue.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's one of these things that, like, it kind of sounds a little bit like you're kind of happy clapping after the sort of the last three games to come out and say, like, you know, just don't worry too much because we're doing okay. Like, don't kind of scrutinize such a short period within what's been an incredible few years of progression, and kind of take that to be, like, you know, the opinions that come out of this three game, like, don't tell that to kind of be how you view things that are going on at the club. I know that, like, Twitter is a small space, you know, particularly in sort of Cambridge United land. And I know that even as, like, a wider kind of societal thing, you know, it's important not to read too much into what you see on Twitter. But I see, like, a couple of suggestions that, like, the players don't care or they're not asked or stuff like that. And I just think over even just the course of this season so far, like, this can't be the takeaway that you've got. Like, it's not like a normal, like, rational response to what's actually going on. So, yeah, I think overall, in terms of, like, things like the identity and the selection and sort of how things are going, I think it's just quite crucial at the moment to just kind of keep calm and just have quite a, you know, sort of rational, sort of level head. And there's no one better than Mark Bonner for that. So thank God that we got him. But, yeah, I mean, for sure, you know, in terms of results, like, we do need to see an improvement pretty quickly. And, Mark Bonner teams have traditionally bounced back very well. This is the first time they've lost three league games in a row under Mark Bonner. So it suggests that hopefully it's something that we're not going to see repeated too often. And yeah, as we mentioned it a couple of times already, Sheffield Wednesday, probably going to be more than 7,000 at the Abbey. There's literally no better time to respond. So yeah, that's the goal, I guess.
You've done very well there to go for a few of the positives that we had lined up for later, because I think we all, three of us, as disappointing as yesterday was, didn't want to sit here and just come out with, you know, what might be termed a very classically negative pod. But you've done very well there to stem a bit of that negativity. And let me just pick up on a point that you mentioned, which is definitely something that's helped me keep my, what's the opposite of feet on the ground? Not lose my head.
Head on the ceiling.
Head on the ceiling. is if you look at the first 14 games of last year, so we've played 13 so far this year, but I'm going to go up to 14 last year, so pretty much the end of October. And this is something that I'd sort of forgotten about, because obviously you think back to last season and you just think of those sort of extreme highs and where we obviously ended up finishing, and the surprise to ourselves and obviously the rest of the division to how well we actually performed for the course of the season. But if you look at those, the start to last season, at this point last year, we'd only won three games, two at home against Burton and Bolton, and then that one at Pompey, like you mentioned, Tom. Some of the draws in there, I mean, granted, there is a lot of decent points in here, you know, Wednesday and Ipswich at home, we've mentioned those, but there's some really poor results in here. That Gillingham at home losing 2-0, drawing to both Crewe and Donny, who obviously all three of them eventually get relegated, drawing at home to Fleetwood. I think it's just important to, losing 4-1 at Shrewsbury as well, being a particularly poor one. I think it's important to not think of last season as just this season that was smooth running from start to finish and didn't have its own fair share of hiccups. Anyway, let's go back to a couple of negatives. It's far too positive. Should we talk about the central midfield? Because this is something that has been asked a lot of us on Twitter, specifically from Thomas and James, who asked the question on a certain Lewis Simper. Casper, I'll give it to you, but I also want Tom's take on this. Something we spoke about a lot yesterday, the three of us on the way there, was what seems strange is this idea that we didn't sign a ball-playing centre midfielder, presumably on the proviso that Lewis Simper is good enough to feature relatively heavily. I mean, you only have to look at my pre-season prediction to see that that's where I thought their thinking was. So, Casper, do you think it's a case of, I mean, he wasn't even in the squad yesterday, which seems relatively extreme when something that we're not very good at is keeping the ball and having that sort of ball-playing midfielder alongside Digby. Casper, do you think, first of all, why do you not think he's getting a chance? Secondly, do you think it's the sort of position that we should be going out and strengthening in pretty quickly, as soon as we can?
Obviously, I've only seen bits and pieces of Simper. And I will say that the times where he's got his opportunities so far have been slightly more relaxed environments, maybe than where we are now. We're in a bit of a dogfight right now. Sort of every game feels like it's going to be a bit of a slog. Obviously, he sort of got a few appearances towards the end of last season. And maybe when we're comfortable, it's a little bit easier to look really good. But I will say he does look like a good footballer. He looks like he does look after the football, which is something I think we're definitely in need of right now. I would suggest he probably will get his opportunity quite soon. If he doesn't, then something quite odd must be going on. This is a bit happy clapper. I'll preface it with that. It's the same with other members of the squad who we're not seeing, you know, Jane, people like this, is to say Mark Bonner and the coaching staff spend, 30 hours a week with these guys. They see them in lots of different situations, in and out. Their frame of reference for picking players and squads is vastly bigger than ours. Obviously, we see the important stuff, which is the games, but they see a lot of other things that are going on. And in a way, I will just put my hands up and say, the coaching staff deserve to be trusted, basically. Like, this is one weird thing that's going on with our, I know we're sort of done with the mentality stuff, but when we talk about the mentality and the little old Cambridge stuff, that needs to extend into the fan base as well. I think people get a little bit ahead of themselves, like we have to go to Bristol Rovers and win. Like, we're suddenly this established League One club that have been, you know, knocking around 10 years at this level. We haven't, like, going to Bristol Rovers yesterday and getting a win would have been a really outstanding result. And I do think people are maybe slightly losing track of that. So I don't know with Lewis Simper. I'd like to see it, but I think we need to manage the situation that he comes into. I don't know if Sheffield Wednesday at home is necessarily that one, but the people who are going to make the decision are, they know a lot more than I do about football and our squad, I guess. So,
yeah, that's true. I mean, let's not take that too far, because then we've sort of got nothing to speak about on this podcast. But
see your point. Admit that completely, obviously, otherwise.
See your point.
Podcast over.
Tom, Simper's someone that you've probably seen more of than me and Casper, considering you watch the Pizza Trophy games. Do you think he's that? Maybe it's not even just about him, actually. It's more about that role in the team is somewhere that we're lacking a certain degree of quality, especially in games where we maybe expect going to have a bit more of the ball, like against Bristol Rovers, for example.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to find a way to diplomatically not come across as too biased here as a fellow Ely U or honorary Ely U as it is now. So I think the way I want to do that is by digging out one of his colleagues. Yeah, I mean, like, the difference is quite stark when I see Liam O'Neill come on the pitch yesterday, the way that he played. And it wasn't just him at Ipswich as well, but he did give the ball away a hell of a lot of times. I'm not talking, you know, failing to pull off like Hollywood 60-yard passes. I'm talking about simple 15-yard passes to a teammate who's basically, you know, very close to you on the pitch. And Digby did that as well a lot, by the way, at Ipswich. So I just want to make clear that I'm not specifically focusing on him for no reason. But second half yesterday, you come on at 2-1 down, half an hour left, and just didn't look like he wanted the ball at all. Sort of just stood in the centre circle, very passive, not doing much. We did get the ball, not doing a huge amount with it. And to me, that just is because his qualities aren't in that part, you know, that sort of part of the game. You know, I'm not someone who sits in the camp of, you know, Liam O'Neill has to leave the football club because he's nowhere near good enough to represent us. But I think in certain scenarios, there are better equipped people in the team to do that. And things like looking after the ball, things like wanting to get on the ball, that simple desire to actually go out and bravely get the ball is something that when you're losing a game like Bristol Rovers, where, you know, again, it's not a game that we just rock up and win. We shouldn't be expecting to beat these teams, but you know that they're going to cling on to it with everything they've got when they go a goal up. You need people who want to get on the ball. You need people who are literally proactively going out and seeking opportunities to win it. And when they get the ball, what can they do with it? I don't think that's Liam O'Neill's game at all. And I'm not saying, you know, here that, you know, someone like Lewis Simper should be starting every game, because, you know, as you said, Casper, there's a time and a place for it. And You know, I would maybe argue that he's competed already this season as better footballers than someone like Barry Bannon, for example, started the game against Southampton, who played, you know, a fairly strong lineup there. But you know, maybe it's not right to throw someone like that in the deep end. I kind of get that point, but it's not necessarily about him starting every game. Like, why is he not at least on the bench? Because I feel like at this point, like we've basically made a very calculated decision with the central midfielders that we've got. These are the four that you want. There's the right balance in there. There's the right level of quality. There's the right ability to go out and compete in any given fixture, you know, that they're needed or should be called upon. And that includes someone like Lewis Imperu. You know, we've made the call on that we wanted to be part of our squad. And at the moment, I feel like if he's not even going to be on the bench in a game like Bristol Rovers away, which, you know, with respect, they're not the best team that we'll face this season, then I kind of feel like he's better out off on loan, developing for our long-term gain, while we maybe have someone on a six-month loan from elsewhere who can sit on the bench and we don't have to worry too much about what's happening in the background. Because part of it is about what's happening now, but like I mentioned in the pod literally just a few moments ago, a lot of this kind of thought process and how we approach things has to be done with the long-term in mind. And that kind of applies to someone like our own young players more so than anyone else in the squad. So that means that, you know, in January, you shuffle the squad around and, you know, you maybe admit that there's been maybe an error made or maybe a slight misjudgment in terms of how ready he is to play at this level. I don't know. I've not seen a huge amount more than you guys. But what I would say is that if you're not going to give them a chance now, then when? And, you know, we saw that with guys like Rossi and Lancaster who are sort of banging on the door and came into, I think, overall pretty good effect. Obviously, Rossi made the mistake against Derby, which we dismantled on the last pod. But yeah, I think there's a sense that maybe it's time to look elsewhere, and maybe there's a sense just to give someone else a chance. And yeah, I guess I guess in hindsight, maybe it's something that Mark Bonner might have done, but he'd have made that decision for a reason, I guess. And as Caspel said, there's plenty of credit in the bank to just trust them based on what they know. But yeah, we'll see how it goes. We're maybe a little bit late in the season for the 30 league appearances so far.
Not just yet, mate. 33 games left, I'll have you know. So
he's got three
more where he can't play for the rest of the season.
Fingers crossed he stays fit. If he makes the next 29 appearances and then gets injured in like April, that's going to be absolutely
I'll take it as a win.
We're going to be a lot better though. That's what I'll say. But yeah,
I think you've nailed it there with the four midfielders. It's like, if Simper's good enough, he's old enough, surely. Because if not, to me, it would make more sense to send him out on a loan, let him develop. If we're not gonna give him a shot at it, seemingly any league match, or it seems to me like then we need someone who is ready. If they don't think Simper is, which, as you say, I think, you know, I'd have enough trust in them to make that call themselves. But it just surprises me that then they wouldn't have gone and signed a loanee in the summer who could play that role. Let's talk about another player who we had a lot of questions on, from James and David, this on Liam Bennett specifically. Caspel, do you think our weakness at fullback is making it look like a bit of a poor choice to send Bennett out on loan?
I'm smiling. Our weakness at fullback? Is that...
I mean, Okadina isn't a fullback. Right.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess we're speaking about our lack of depth at fullback, right? And not a weakness, because George Williams hasn't suddenly overnight stopped being a good footballer.
Here's my point on this, Caspel, is that unless you're going to play Liam Bennett at left back, George Williams is probably a better right back than Bennett. So I don't think, like, I just, all this general claim for Bennett, like he's just going to be this magic man that will sort everything out. Fundamentally, is a right back.
Liam Bennett's not a left back, though. He's not
exactly. This is what I'm saying.
He doesn't come in and solve this problem. Like, I understand. Do you know what? It's probably quite similar to the discussion we've just had about Lewis Simper. It's similar to the absolute fury that Saiku Janna's not getting moments as well, or sort of more minutes than he has. And it's basically just his footballer saying, I've read the running order, so you know what I'm going to say. But
here we go. Tom's going here.
What, my point in the running order? You're just going to...
I'm going to take that and paint it as my own. But it's basically just this idea that players get better the less they play. The biggest example of that was always Andy Pugh. Do you remember back in the promotion years when you had like Cunnington and Tom Elliott and at times Apaya? And like, you'd go on runs where you win like 15 games or like you're unbeaten for 15 and then you lose one. And it was like, why the fuck isn't Pugh playing? And it's kind of a bit like that with, it's kind of a bit like that with someone like Janna. And you know what? A lot of it, I think, comes from, again, I don't want to sound like I'm digging him out, but I think it comes from a sort of a younger part of the fan base who basically they would rate players based on how much they interact with you on Twitter and how much they applaud you at the end, right next to the away end, more so than like, I don't know, establishing yourselves as the best Cambridge United team in 30 years. And that kind of holds more credit. And I don't want to sound like I'm digging them out because I get that when you're at that age and maybe you've just started going or you've been going for a couple of years, things like how much players come over to you and take a selfie with you or something at the end of the game, that holds a lot, you know, in the way that you view sort of or how you build your opinions on things. But it doesn't matter. Like, does it matter? It doesn't mean they should be in the team just because of that. And the Bennett one, I think, is maybe more frustrating for certain people because, you know, we view him as one of our own, even though he's absolutely factually not one of our own in the sense that, you know, others are, because we signed him from elsewhere. But the fact that we maybe view him as the future, you know, maybe Williams has another couple of years and then that spot becomes Bennett's. So I get that there's a frustration there, but questions about Liam Bennett, like it's going to end up being exactly the same situation as Lewis Simper. You know, you've got someone who you believe has quality and really high potential in the game, but they basically end up playing second fiddle to people who are more established and more experienced. Like George Williams is going to start every game he's fit. And, you know, besides a crisis at left back, he's going to start right back every game. And so would you rather have someone developing out of position, making mistakes, or do you want them out on loan playing at a decent level every week in their preferred position where we see them in the next 5 or 10 years potentially? So yeah, that's the one on Liam Bennett, but I kind of do understand also why maybe that question's come up.
This is great. You asked me that question.
Yeah. I mean, I think Tom summarized it very well, but Casper, if you want to have a pop.
No, I mean, yeah, what else to expand upon? And to be fair, I think Tom touched on it with Lewis Simper. Like, the club has a great long-term view of what they want to do with Liam Bennett. I think just take a minute and acknowledge that it's the first player we've loaned to a League Two team. Like, we are in League One loaning players out to League Two teams and he is like starting all of their games. That is a bit of a marker of how far we've come, that we are in a position where we can send players to League Two and they can be first team starters when we arguably have at the moment stronger players back at home. I think it is just a football fan thing. It's this need for change, which we've spoken about before, like the sort of itchy feet, the restlessness that people get. I think Bennett looks like an outstanding player. We know he can't come back till January anyway because of his loan, the way his loan is set up. So in a way, you can just move on. I think Tom probably nailed it, to be fair.
Yeah, that's
Casper,
it. Casper, you can
butt in and take all the airtime for the next question that I'm asked, mate. We can maybe set
up. That's it. I'm going to cut you down.
Well, okay, have a go at this one then. All right, I'll give it to Tom, but Casper, I would actually genuinely like your take on this as well. Something sort of going back to yesterday's game in isolation, maybe this is something you can extrapolate as a trend over the season, Tom, but let's talk about yesterday's game like just in isolation for a second. Something that was quite worrying was both how we started and how we ended the game for very different reasons. Like the first 20 minutes and the last 20 minutes for completely different reasons, actually. One defensively, one from an attacking sense, were extremely poor. But especially the last 20 minutes, because it feels like to me that one thing we've always done, or Bonner's sides have always done, maybe I'm wrong about this, maybe this is just a reflection I have, but I want to know what you think, that when we're chasing a game, we always seem to find a way to make chances. We always seem like we have the right intent to attack. Felt like yesterday it just fizzled out into this damp like affair where we just didn't have any sort of real chances in that last 20 minutes when we had all the impetus to go and attack. Is that something that worries you, Tom? Like, even when we're throwing people on, we still couldn't carve out anything of note, really, to, you know, we should have been piling the pressure on. It felt like last season, there's a couple of examples, maybe Crewe away being a good one, where we managed to rescue something out of nowhere. Maybe I'm taking the game in itself in isolation. Like you said, it's a hard place to go. But do you think there's something that worries you there at all?
Yeah, I mean, we've had enough practice at going 1-0 down this season or going behind that you'd think by now we would have a solid idea of how to go about and combating that particular scenario. Yeah, I think you are right, and there's been plenty of times where at the start of games we've just not started well enough, and you know mistakes have crept in, and then at the end of games maybe just it's been a bit damp, you know, in terms of in terms of the, you know, how well we can kind of threaten teams. And I think ultimately they're obviously the two periods in games that you probably remember most. You know, no one's talking about how well we were pushing on the 37th minute. They were talking about, you know, why aren't we piling bodies forward at the end? And that's fine. That's perfectly understandable. What I would say is that we battled back really well from going 1-0 down. Obviously, you know, had a really sustained spell of pressure that led to the penalty, and obviously Ironside levelling things up. And then literally moments before they scored, I think we created two or three really good chances and
really good chances,
and probably realistically on another day should be taking them. And I guess then, you know, the whole game swings on its head, doesn't it? If one of them goes in and we're suddenly the ones in, you know, who are 2-1 up, and then it's about how can you sort of manage this situation and kind of see things out. Clearly it's ifs and buts, because it didn't happen and they went out there and scored, and then so how can you respond? I think, to be honest, I think less so than it being like systemic problems about being unable to impact games in the right way in the last part of it, or being unable to, you know, start games sort of at it from the beginning. I do think a lot of it just comes back to the question on subs. Tracy Locke and Abiro come on the 78th minute yesterday. You know, as with any professional athlete, it's going to take them a few minutes to kind of get into the rhythm of the game and get into the speed of the game. And I actually thought when we were getting the ball to Tracy, he was looking pretty threatening. But unfortunately, the actual time that he's got to do stuff is pretty limited, even with, you know, a pretty lengthy amount of stoppage time added on. I just think maybe if we just gave players like that another 5 or 10 minutes to really be able to impact those games properly once they're up to speed, I think we would see more results. It's not all because of subs, but I do think that there's something in that argument and something in that question. Like, it's come up so often over the last particularly 2 years. It's come up so often that I just don't think we could be wrong all the time to be discussing it. So that bit may be the one thing for me. But I think Bonner alluded to it in the post-match as well, that he did, you know, we probably created more than enough to get something out of that game. And I think he's right, but we didn't get anything from the game. So, I guess we move on to the next one.
Yeah. Yeah, we do move on to the next one. Caswell, let me ask you this just before we move on to a preview of Sheffield Wednesday. This is from James. Interesting one. It's not really on yesterday's game, but it's weirdly something that the three of us were talking about yesterday. What's happened to Ben Warman? Clearly the plan loan move didn't come to fruition, but how has he gone so off the boil since breaking into the first team and looking so promising last season? It's easy to forget this is a guy that started at Newcastle and looked very much at ease in this side towards the end of, you know, this time last year, let's say. What's your take on Ben Warman?
I'm going to do that thing I did like 5 minutes ago, where I just like laugh at the question. Has he gone off the boil? He's just disappeared out of the squad. Does that mean he's not even on the hop, mate. He's not on the hop, that's the problem. To be honest, I have no idea what's gone on with him. Something must have happened is kind of what we all concluded on the train yesterday, because he wasn't in the pizza trophy squad at all either. I have no inside track or inside knowledge. So I have no idea what is actually happening. But it is a bit curious. And again, obviously, he played a bit of a role last season. So again, in a sort of slightly smaller way, maybe than Lewis Simper, it's a bit of a sort of question mark we have of like, where has he gone and what's going on, basically? Not really sure, to be honest. Let's see what happens over the next few months.
I don't know if it's telling or not that, you know, this point about players, the stock of players rising when they're not playing. You look at Janna, Bennett, Simper. We've got no like genuine proof that they're going to make this team right now particularly better. But there's not been a lot said about Warman. You know, like, is Warman an option that we could try in that centre midfield role, playing a bit deeper alongside Digby? Clearly not, because he's so out of favour at the moment. He's just completely out of the picture. But interesting. What a cruel game this is. Speaking of cruel games, let's move on to who we've got next, Sheffield Wednesday at home. Let's start with a preview from James from the Wednesday Till I Die pod. Hi, mate. Thank you very much for joining the podcast and taking the time out of your day. Obviously, Sheffield Wednesday looking like you're in a really good spot at the moment. What's the sort of mood like amongst the fan base?
Yeah, it's a weird one, to be honest. Obviously, we're recording this before Cheltenham, but at the time we're third in the league, which, you know, on the face of it, like you said there, it looks quite good. But the mood is mixed, which I know is going to sound really mad, but, you know, I think the expectation, obviously this is our second season in League One now, so we failed to get up last year, obviously got to the playoffs, but I think the expectation is that we're going to absolutely walk it. And I think fans are getting kind of, I don't want to say anxious, but you know, they just want to get out of this league, you know, as quickly as we possibly can. I think it is being a bit unrealistic that, you know, we're going to win every single game. That's not going to be the case. But yeah, when you look where we are, if you take a step back and look at the bigger picture, you know, the fact that we are third in the league. I know Plymouth, they beat us in midweek last week, but they kind of looks like they're running away with it a little bit. But they did the same last season, so it's nothing to worry about. So to answer to your initial question, the mood is mixed that we're third in the league, which again, yeah, sounds crazy.
It does seem like quite a big month for Wednesday, though, right? With, like you mentioned, the Cheltenham game, then you've got us, Lincoln, Bristol Rovers, Burton. It seems like a month where you can really sort of put your stamp on the league.
Yeah, definitely. It's not just that as well. I think it extends out of that as well. We've got Accrington, Shrewsbury as well before we play Derby. And I think Derby is the only team in the top eight that we play up until end of January. So there's a lot of teams that are that are lower down, let's say, that yeah, we on paper we'd be looking at, you know, 3 points. I don't want to say an easy 3 points and things like that, but you know, when you do look at them, you're going to target those games, and yeah, we're not going to win them all, we know that, but yeah, there's a few banana skins in there, but you know, realistically, you know, yeah, we are going to be confident going into those games. And you're right, I think when you look at Wigan and Rotherham last season, the reason why they were where they are is around about this time, especially going up into Christmas, they put a decent run together, whether that's 8, 9, 10 games unbeaten or whatever it was. I think Rotherham had a crazy unbeaten run at one point. So at the moment this season, we've had 3 defeats and they've all kind of, it's been a couple of games, then a defeat, a couple of games, another defeat. We've not really got a bit of a run going. So you're right, this month in October is a chance for us to get a bit of a run going.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, don't feel too bad about saying that you're going to beat us, as we'll come on to, considering the result at Hillsborough last time we played each other. Yeah. The man in charge is still Darren Moore. What's how's he setting up? Is it any different to last year?
No, it's a 3-5-2 that he's been playing pretty much, well, I think every game this season. I think we've changed it against Accrington away, set up in a 4-2-2-2, a bit of a strange formation. But on the whole, it has been 3-5-2. We have had injuries as well, especially to that left centre half position. We brought Firmino in. He's then got injured in his first game. Then we brought McGuinness in on loan from Cardiff. He's been injured, although he could be back, you know, this weekend and probably definitely by the time we play yourselves. And then Reece James got injured against Plymouth. So, you know, 3 players that have all been playing in that position have all been injured, but he has been sticking with that 3-5-2. We have got Mighton and Wilkes, which don't really fit in a 3-5-2 formation, and because of that, they've not been playing. I'd like to think that they would probably, you know, Darren Moore's probably got something up his sleeve to try and get them in, because he was chasing Wilkes for quite some time throughout the summer, and of course bringing, you know, the quality that Mighton's got from Notts Forest as well. I can't just see them both just being happy just sat on the bench.
Yeah, interesting. Feels like they'll have a big part to play this month. Well, you mentioned at the start there that the mood amongst the fan base has been a bit mixed despite sitting third in the league. Is that something to do with the way that Moore plays, or like the way the team actually plays rather than results? Or is it?
I think a section of fans just don't like Darren Moore for whatever reason. You know, the quite a lot of people say that with this squad we should be doing a lot better. I think they forget that it's Darren Moore's squad that he's put together. You know, he hasn't inherited it. He's actually brought the players in. So it's a bit unfair to say that we should be doing better with this squad. It is his players that he's brought in, and we sit third in the league as well. I think, like I said, quite a lot of people are just unrealistic in terms of their expectations. So, but you know, if you search on the SWFC hashtag, especially after we've been beat, it is quite toxic. That kind of transfers to the fans in the ground as well, which again, I think it all comes back down to that, the expectation. And whenever results aren't going our way, I think fans just think we're one step away, one step further away from actually getting out of this division. So, and it's kind of, that impatience, you know what I mean? That people want it, we wanted to go up last season. Obviously we came close, we got into the playoffs. Everyone wants to go one step further. And I think, people rightly or wrongly see it kind of slipping away every time we don't pick up a 3 points. And even when we do, we beat Forest Green Rovers 5-0 and fans were still unhappy. I think you're going to get them anywhere, but again, I think, the most of the fan base, if not all of them, think that, I don't want to say that we shouldn't be here, because, and when I say here, I mean League One, because we're here for a reason. And I do understand that, but most fans think that we should be in the Championship, and obviously we came that close to coming into the Premier League back in 2015, which seems an absolute age ago now.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's only, to be fair, I mean, that's quite humble of you in a way, because I think we've had a lot of big clubs who have that, who come to the Abbey and have that sort of, I don't want to call it big club arrogance, but let's go with that, where, that they sort of feel like there's an entitlement to it, which is understandable though with a club like Wednesday, in the sense that, it's understandable that a fan base has that sort of expectation.
Yeah, I get it. I do understand where it comes from. You look at the players, and no disrespect, there's probably, I don't say there's any player that you'd pick out of your squad that would get into our first team. Potentially one or two, but then again, when you compare them, you'd still probably pick the players that we've got. And that's no slight on you. That's just the budgets that we've got compared to the budgets that you've got and the players that we've brought in. I mean, as to, it's all different when it comes down to 90 minutes of football. And of course, just because you've got the better players don't mean that you're entitled to win. But that's where it comes from. Like I said, the budgets and things like that, and just the expectation that we shouldn't be playing here. So, but it sometimes goes against us, because, teams do raise the game against Sheffield Wednesday. We've seen that already this season, and definitely saw it last season.
Definitely, yeah. In a way that, maybe most Wednesday fans won't appreciate, that is sort of the magic of League One, where you've got the, your Cambridges and your Morecambes and your Fleetwoods going up against Ipswich Wednesday and Pompey, etc. every week. So if, a game you mentioned where, we upped our game quite a lot was this fixture last year at the Abbey on a Tuesday night, where we held you to a 1-1 draw. If you were doing the scout report for Mark Bonner and Cambridge United, what weaknesses in your squad would you pick out, or what do you think a sort of route to getting a result against Wednesday might be for a club like us?
Well, our strength is also our weakness, and that's Barry Bannon. Everyone knows what Barry Bannon's capable of, and I think if you can stop Barry Bannon from playing, then we do tend to struggle. That being said, I think we've relied on him a little bit less this season than we have last, in terms of, last season he was top for, passes and key touches on the ball and possession and things like that. This season, not as much so, but he averages 3 key passes a game, which is the most in the League One. And I think I looked at it a couple of weeks ago, and there's only Kevin De Bruyne and Mo Salah in the whole of the 92 clubs that actually average more key passes than what Barry Bannon does. And that just shows you how influential he is. We perhaps don't finish the chances as much as what we should do. Having said that, we have scored the second most goals in the league, but we have squandered chances as well. So, if you stop Barry Bannon from playing, then that's gonna hurt us. I think teams that are resolute, and the longer that the game is 0-0, obviously, I think it goes without saying for any game really. But the more of a chance that you'll probably have. If you frustrate us, probably more so at home than away, because obviously the home fan, when you've got 20,000 fans getting agitated, that probably works more so in your favour. But yeah, if you can keep it 0-0 for as long as you can, then you're always going to be in with a chance. We have conceded conceded a late goal against Plymouth just recently to lose 2-1.
It's funny you say that, actually, just you say that about sort of the fan base being a little bit split on how you've started. Is an example that Tuesday night when you came down to our place last year, on the way back.
That was a horrible, horrible night, by the way.
It was,
if I remember
it?
Right, it was pissing windy, it was rainy. Yeah. Yeah, it was horrible, yeah.
And then all the trains got cancelled back to London. I don't know if you obviously you might not have been heading that way, but there was plenty of Wednesday fans heading back to London after. And they all got cancelled, so there's like rail replacement. It was carnage at the station, right? We ended up getting on this coach with, there was like, because there weren't, it was just basically full of Wednesday fans. And we just got chatting to a couple of lads at the back. And we were saying like, oh, Bannon, I mean, what a player. It's unbelievable to see a guy like that play football. And they said something along the lines of, I think he's shit. I'd like to take a sledgehammer to his knees. And I thought, right, that's an introduction to League One if like a player like that isn't being appreciated by yeah. I'm sure I might have just spoke to like, you know, one bloke. Yeah,
I think he is appreciated, but I think it comes, you know, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. I think
sure,
that,
yeah.
That is kind of the thing with Barry Bannon. And he sets the bar that high that, you know, he puts in a performance that for anyone else, it would be an 8 or a 9. But for Barry Bannon, you do come away sometimes a little bit disappointed because he's only managed, yeah. You know, there's just the one assist and 4 key passes on this one particular game. You do get a bit yeah. I said, he does set the bar too high. Oh, I mean, right. I'm just looking as well, the team that played at Cambridge, it will be a lot different. You know, we had Patterson starting up front. I don't, you know, we had injuries last season. I don't think he'll be anywhere near the starting lineup. You know, we've brought in Michael Smith, who got promoted with Rotherham, obviously elected to stay in League One with us. Gregory started against you, and he's probably going to be starting again. Other players that probably won't be playing, Dunkley's gone to Shrewsbury, and Lewis Wing, his loan got terminated. So we have got, you know, the likes of George Byers, we've got Will Volks in midfield. The whole defence has all kind of been shaken up somewhat. We've got Hennigan from Wimbledon. We've got Michael Ihekwe again, who came from Rotherham, who got promoted as well. So yeah, it is going to be
you're not filling me with confidence, James. listing half of the best players in League One.
That is literally what we've done. We've signed one of the leading goal scorers. We've signed
best centre half.
Ihekwe, they got in a team of the season. So yeah. I think that was Darren Moore's scouting philosophy. He sacked all the scouts and just looked on the best stats and who got the most highest rated.
It's not a bad way to go. Well, you know, on the back of that, I'm gonna have to ask you for a prediction, and don't worry, I won't be too offended if you're gonna go heavy in one direction. But what do you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, away games are obviously more difficult than at home. I'm under no illusion that you're probably going to try and make it difficult for us. And, you know, I'm not going to say park the bus, but you're going to probably try and catch us on the counter-attack and soak up as much pressure as you possibly can. I think we have probably got too much firepower. And if we get one goal, it'll probably follow with two or three. So I think I'm going to go with a 3-0 win against you guys.
And that's fair enough, James. At the time of recording, anyway, let's catch up after if there's a shock. Thanks very much yes. for joining, mate.
Cheers, pal. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much to James for that. It's worth me saying that another apology to James because I set up this Zoom call, sent the link to him, minimized Zoom on my laptop while I was doing something else, and spent 5 minutes chatting to my girlfriend about what the best chocolate in a box of Heroes is while James was sat on the call and I had no idea. So sorry about that, James. But
what is the best?
I'm a caramel man, mate. The Dairy Milk caramel for me is right up there. So, but also, mate, just the standard Dairy Milk. I know that's a bit boring, but can blow your mind.
Tom Walker strikes me as a bounty man.
Controversial hot takes till the very last breath.
Yeah, we now cannot release this podcast. We'll be taken out to court for utter slot. That's defamation. That is fucking bounties. That's what Ipswich fans must like. I think you're probably overlooking the Malteser there. And I think there's got to be a serious conversation about the Galaxy Truffle as well, which
yeah, well, that's fair enough. I wouldn't like to end this conversation without mentioning the Whisper as well.
But the Whisper's in there now, is it? That's a surprise late addition.
The Whisper is, well, do you know what the thing is? I think we've got a box of Roses and Heroes just mixed into one thing in the house, so I'm not entirely sure which ones, what categories,
oh,
and
no.
what. We've mixed the two. Yeah, we've crossed the divide here.
Jesus,
there's probably some celebrations talking about in there as well. Anyway,
speaking of celebrations,
yeah, very nice, Tom. Very good. Caspel, what would you change for this game, United wise? Maybe score Bennett more goals and concede less.
Yeah. Bennett at left back, Simper in centre mid, Jané on the wing. Yeah,
Pugh up front.
Pugh up top.
Yeah. Andy Pugh up front. What would I change? I think we've covered a lot of the ground already in the sense of let's go back to being little old Cambridge. So, you know, we made the pitch narrow for a reason. I think it's a very reasonable thing for us to go into this game with respect, but not awe, if you know what I mean. And this has come, it has become a bit of a talking point, rightly or wrongly, people sort of saying that maybe we, or Mark Bonner is very praising of the opposition teams before the games. For me, it doesn't make any difference whatsoever. He's not going to slag them off. So
they're two very different things, what he then tells the players in a pre-match, in a changing room to what he says to the media.
I would say so. I mean, we need to obviously, Sheffield Wednesday are another sort of historic, very strong side at this level. We're going to need to be on it. Tom mentioned earlier, over 7,000 people in the Abbey, and a bit of pressure on the game now because obviously we've had a difficult few weeks. So, yeah, I want to see, you know, all the usual things that you want to see when you go to these games anyway. Not that I'm actually going to this one, but metaphorically, I want to see a lot of work rate, a lot of passion. Let's get stuck into them a bit, you know, let's put our foot in and let's try and put our stamp on the game. Let's remember that the Abbey is a kind of compact, not the sort of place that many of the Sheffield Wednesday players should really like going. You know, it's almost a little bit of a mentality of treating it slightly like a cup game, again, without being overawed, but just sort of put it up them and just like try something a bit different and be physical. And, you know, I don't think we have it in our locker quite right now to sort of try and outplay a Sheffield Wednesday. So let's just be really, really fucking nasty and just try and see if we can disrupt their rhythm enough and then go and get a goal and just kind of shut it down. I mean, I said to you over the last few weeks, both of you, we desperately need a 0-0 draw on our slate, like a clean sheet and a draw. We're just not drawing games and we're not keeping clean sheets. Obviously, I'd prefer to win the game, but I really feel like a really positive outcome from this game would be like if we could get a 0-0, even if it's incredibly grisly viewing, if you know what I mean. Just like nullify the game, get a point, and move on and then build something more positive against Port Vale.
It does feel like, yeah, we just, you know, don't let them play their game is going to be sort of point one on the agenda for this. And something that I don't know if you boys agree with, but like taking the Barnsley and the Derby game, it's like, let's make them work for their goals if they're going to score goals, because they very much might, and they very much are one of the best teams in the league. But let's not go gifting goals. Let's be a bit more resolute than that. Which is something we did do very well last year. Both of you, I'm actually interested. I'm going to ask you for your 1 to 11. Yeah. Your starting lineup for Saturday's game, just because I'm interested to see who you're popping at centre half and at centre mid. So I don't know, Casper, I'll start with you. I know it's a bit off the top of your head, and I didn't have this on the running order. I just thought of it. Oh, no, I do have it on there. So actually,
I told you, we didn't say 1 to 11. I already told you, Bennett, Pugh, Jane. I guess, I mean, I'm going to deflect this slightly. It's a bit of a question of who is fit, I guess, which I don't...
No. I want you
assuming
to
they're all...
Yeah. assume they're fit. Yeah.
Assume they're all fit. All right. Mitov, Williams. Oh, God. Is Dunk fit? Is he actually fit?
Dunk's probably fit. Dunk for the sake of this, Dunk's fit.
Okay, for the sake of this, Dunk's fit. God, this is pressure. It's like doing a Jenga, but no actual right or wrong
answer. No
answer. I'd probably bring Okadina back. I hope to see Okadina back as centre back. Mm-hmm. With who's that other centre back? Lloyd Jones.
Jones.
God, this is a struggle.
The one who has a very decent amount of credit, I think it's worth saying, from this season so far, considering our defensive issues.
Yeah, again, I think he was like one of our better ball playing in many games, he's been one of our better ball playing players, which worries me slightly. Digby, I think if we're going to set up the way we need to set up this, I'll make Tom angry. Possibly Liam O'Neill. That's going to really wind him up. Maybe it's worth it. Bounty man, Tom Walker.
I'm a fan. I was just not a fan of watching someone stand in the centre circle for 30 minutes when you're trailing the game.
But we've done that. We've done that. We can move on now.
Who else forgot? Tracy on the right, Brophy on the left. Who have I forgotten about? Ironside up top. I've got space for one more, haven't I?
Smith or Nibs? So you're dropping one of them.
Probably Nibbler.
And you're dropping Smith?
Probably. You forced me to do this on Interesting. The spot.
Tom, what are you changing from that lineup?
I probably just have Barry Bannon in there for centre midfield, I think.
That'll do it.
No, I think I would like to see some sort of change of shape. That'd be something that I would maybe suggest. I'm not sure what that would be.
Christmas tree.
Oh, George screaming into his headphones. Just desperate for me to say three at the back. There's probably some merit to that, I think.
I don't know about trialing it against these, but maybe, like, what have we got to lose? I don't know.
Yeah.
The football match.
I think...
League One status. I think,
yeah. look, I think talking about trialing things and trying things against Sheffield Wednesday being very risky, I think is... It's a bit moot because we could just stay what we've been doing and get beaten comfortably anyway. Mm. If that's not too negative a take, I would basically like to see us just return to just square pegs and square holes. And if there's an injury somewhere, and I'm thinking left back specifically here, then just play Brophy there, rather than kind of having one injury kind of make you change almost the entire structure of the back of the team. That's what I maybe look to do. And I think if Brophy, you know, is to play left back, if Dunk and if Houndstrup, we've barely talked about this season, if they are both injured, and Brophy does have to play there, then I think that means you have to kind of pack the midfield a bit more. And that maybe is an opportunity to bring someone like Lewis Simper into the team. Or you have Liam O'Neill sitting really tight and, you know, sort of really, really deep. You know, maybe can frequent the centre circle a little bit more, and then have May and obviously Digby just ahead of him. And then you just have pace going forward. So, you know, that would ideally be Tracy. Maybe you even start Okunabire, maybe have a Smith on the other side or something like that. That'd be maybe what I would look at. I basically think you have to, in a game like this, be able to, if you can't sort of beat the likes of Barry Bannon based on the quality in your squad, which I'm not expecting us to be able to do, you know, and it's not just him, it's worth saying. There's plenty of others in that midfield that can hurt us. But I think that's realistically where the game's going to be won or lost. If we can just kind of outnumber them and outfight them and, you know, ideally leave a couple of reducers in their early doors, then I think you stand a decent chance of getting something. So yeah, I think essentially keep it tight at back, pack the midfield, pace on the break. It's starting to sound like a John Barnes rap, isn't it? I think that's what I'd go with.
Easy, you make it sound easy. Just tell Bonner that, because it sounds like you've got all the answers, mate.
Yeah, mate. I'm just waiting for Rotherham to call me now. I won't move up to a shithole.
Fucking hell.
Brilliant. All right, well, let's wrap it up on that note, shall we? Caspar, thanks very much for helping me inject some positivity into this podcast.
No problems, mate. Thanks for making me basically on the spot go through a 1-11. It was fucking painful.
Like. Well, I mean, for a football team you follow week in, week out, I'd have thought it'd be easier than that, but
not just that you follow week in, week out, that you spend at least an hour a week actively reviewing and analysing.
Anyway, Tom, thank you as well, mate, for your consummate professional attitude at all points.
The pleasure's all mine. I'm just glad that I managed to get through the entire pod about calling Ipswich fans.